And I heard a voice actually above my head saying, "There he is." It was like a kind of clairaudience experience. It's a kind of experience I don't have very often, but I have had a few times in my life. And I was like, "What? There who is?" Like, and then I just found myself singing with him. And it was a really unique experience because I didn't know the song. And although the song is fairly repetitive, it was like the melody was being revealed to me before I'd even heard it.
Hello, welcome to Soul Awakenings with Madhya Sosen podcast. Today we have a very, very special guest with us, and they are called Sri Nari. Now, who are Sri Nari? Sri Nari are a dynamic duo comprised of Lucidia Omamori and Rafael Machente. They are a leading duo in the spiritual music scene in the UK, and they tour internationally playing at events such as alternative festivals, meditation, sound healing, and yoga retreat. The heart and soul of Sri Nari's vision is to uplift the world through authentic expression, to be daring in their creativity, honest in their communication, and courageous in their performances. So without further ado, let's bring them on. Hi guys, how are you doing?
Hi.
Yeah, really good. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I mean, it's I'm just wondering, like, we met last year, didn't we? At our friend's Conscious Dinner Club.
Yeah.
That was the first time you met, and then we didn't really connect until the lockdown, actually. You guys were doing your first ever Facebook Live concert, and I was like, yes, I know them. Tell us a bit about yourself, like, how did you guys meet, and how did music bring you guys together?
We met at a gig where actually Raphael was hired to do the sound on that particular occasion, right? Mm. And I was booked as a singer. And wasn't it that you had to buy, you didn't actually have the equipment you needed for that gig, and you had to buy a piece of equipment, right?
Yeah, it was it was my second year in music uni, actually. And I had this guitar. It's a long story, and it's not relevant to go into that. But anyway, I had a guitar that I wanted to get rid of, and suddenly somebody asked me, "Can you do the sound for this event?" And I didn't have the gear, but I sold that guitar just to buy everything that I needed to do the gig.
Yeah.
And that's, you know.
That's why. So I said
yes to that, and I went there and I did the sound, and that's how we met.
Yeah, yeah. And then it was in the middle of the evening, they asked him to play a song. And I hadn't actually sang on my own yet at that point. Like, I was just joining in, and my set was much later. And then when they asked Raphael to play a song, I just was immediately captivated by just the intro of the song was so beautiful, actually. And I was like, wow, like, who's he? And I heard a voice actually above my head saying, "There he is." It was like a kind of clairaudience experience. It's a kind of experience I don't have very often, but I have had a few times in my life. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "What? There who is?" Like, and then I just found myself singing with him. And it was a really unique experience because I didn't know the song. And although the song is fairly repetitive, it was like the melody was being revealed to me before I'd even heard it. It was a really strange moment, like kind of auspicious moment in my life. And I was thinking, God, I hope he doesn't mind that I'm just hijacking his song and joining in with him without even knowing him. And I was looking at him thinking, I really hope he looks up from his guitar and just like acknowledges me and lets me know this is okay, because it's a little bit intrusive potentially. And then he looked up and he just nodded like that. And I was like, okay, cool. So I just kept singing. And then in the end, like, it was interesting. Everyone was sitting down. We were both standing up. Or were you sitting down and I was standing up?
I was standing up.
You were standing up too. So we were both standing up. And then when I sat down, everyone's like, wow, I had no idea you knew him. Like, that was really beautiful. I was like, I don't know him. Like, well, how did you know the song? I was like, I don't know the song. I don't know. It was really amazing. It's magical, totally magical. Mm. So that was the beginning of our meeting. And yeah. At the end of the night, I said to him, oh yeah, we were chatting and I was like, yeah, I'm going to do an album. And he said, I'd like to play on your album. I was like, you're going to be on everything.
So you guys were meant to come together, right?
I guess so.
Very much so, yeah.
It was just like written in the stars and the universe and everything is, yeah, you're aligning mm-hmm. you guys together. So
do you
come from a spiritual background? I mean, you can both answer this individually. Mm-hmm. Do you both come from a spiritual background?
Okay. Shall I?
Yeah.
So do I come from a spiritual background? That's so I come from a Catholic, I would say family, but that would be inaccurate, from my Catholic mom, because my dad couldn't care any less. And pretty much none of us, like we're five siblings, pretty much none of us really embraced Catholicism, Christianity. Mm-hmm. You know, like we all kind of stepped out of it pretty, as soon as we could really, I mean, I guess. I probably was the last one that my mom was taking to church because I was the youngest one. But at some point I was like, mom, I really don't feel like coming. and then I think the, you know, many years later, I came back to spiritual concepts, mostly through psychology, actually, funnily enough. At some point I started reading quite a bit of Carl Jung. And Jungian analysts as well, and you know, and different people, and then I started coming into contact with, you know, kind of modern spirituality, and you know, and people who were interested in Indian philosophy and Reiki and chakras and these and that. So I didn't kind of like fully go into it. It was kind of like a, you know, something that I was in contact with and curious about, but I think what happened is that my musical expression, because I was a musician already, I started playing guitar in 93, and I started with rock bands and rock blues and this and that, and then kind of when I left the bands that I was with in the 90s, then I started going into a more introspective acoustic kind of direction, and naturally the way I started writing lyrics naturally started being much more existential and much more, you know, for a few years before I can do any kind of spiritual practice, I was already writing a certain way, you know. Mm. And then I think the moment that, you know, one crossroads in my life was when I went to India on my own in 2005. And I actually sat for 10 days in a Vipassana retreat.
What did you?
And that was kind of like, you know, a big opening for me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, background, probably my spiritual background is more religious than spiritual, and I rejected it. Yeah. And then gradually I started, you know, connected with certain aspects of certain things, but I don't feel like I follow any specific path and I identify with that which resonates with me, you know, and I'm mostly into Buddhism and meditation, I would say.
Yeah. Mm. Mm. Okay, what about you, Lucidia?
And mantra singing.
Yeah, we like that.
Yeah.
So I grew up with, in a very alternative, I guess you could say, household. Like my dad was like as much of a hippie you could possibly imagine from the 60s, like literally the epitome of the 60s hippie, and all of his experimentation and exploration that was made some great story time when I was a child. And we grew up in the middle of the countryside, and my mum was like really into Buddhism, and she was also a Quaker. Mm. Like, she used to attend the Quaker meetings. Also, we used to go to the monastery, Buddhist monastery, at weekends, and my parents would meditate, and we had to help the monks in the kitchen. Oh. And do our like dharma practice, like as in like the doing, I can't remember what you call it now, the Dharmic yoga, you know, karma yoga. Which we were a little bit disgruntled about, but then we really enjoyed it because the monks were very funny and we had a lot of fun with them and playing hide and seek in the pantry and stuff after we'd help them with their chores. And then we used to go to Krishnamurti talks a lot, and I used to go to the nursery, and I remember that distinctly. We used to go to Rockwood Park where he used to give his talks, and remember distinctly because at the end of the talks, the kids would come back in from the creche, like where I'd be doing pottery, and it was a really well-organized creche. And I remember that he took me and I sat on his lap, and I remember my dad being so excited. He's like, "You sat on Krishnamurti's lap." I was like, "What, that old man?" It was like, yeah. So funny. So yeah, so we had a lot of it wasn't all like perfect, my childhood at all. Like my parents were lacking in harmony, to say the least, and there's all kinds of things I could say and probably won't on a public forum, but you know, we got through it. And then my parents separated when I was about 11. My dad moved to America. Mm-hmm. And eventually I also ended up in America, and then I moved to LA for a while and had a really burned myself out kind of with just a lot of negative people. And then I moved to live with my Buddhist priest friend, my Zen Buddhist priest friend, Shinto priest, who is both Buddhist, Zen and Shinto, in a Zen monastery in California, the Temple of Compassionate Light, Jikoji. Mm-hmm. And so I had an amazing time living there. It was funny because I basically lived there based on my connection with the head priest there. Ruho Yamada, and as a prerequisite to living there, I had to do Zazen every morning, and I didn't even know what Zazen was at that point. I hadn't ever done any Zen Buddhism, and so I had to like get up super early. I think it was 4:45, and do the Zazen practice, and I started to experience a lot of deep realizations during that practice. So it was all very unexpected. And then of course, living in the aura, I was sharing a room with the head priest because there were no rooms available at the temple. So to have me living there, he said, "Well, I'll share my room with her." Mm-hmm. So we had two little single beds in the room, and I was sleeping in the aura of a very realized person, I guess. And that was an incredible experience. And he gave me a lot of healing and got me through a lot of trauma that I had in my life, actually. I'd had a lot of crazy experiences and a lot of very lost experiences and a lot of assault in different ways. And it was amazing to have the focus of someone like that. He really lifted my boat out to sea, you know. It was an incredible blessing, an absolutely incredible blessing.
What is this? Is it Zazen?
Zazen. It's like Zen meditation. It's just sitting practice, basically. It's very methodical. It's always done the same way, same posture. Your hand goes like in a certain way, and your hands rest in a certain position. And it's basically a very, very simple meditation practice. Mm. But it was very profound for me. Mm. And I understood the value of it.
Do you like stay in the one position for hours, or I know?
I think it was only like 45 minutes.
Okay, mm-hmm.
But it was like, for me, that was still quite a big thing.
Right,
but they did have a lot of practices at the temple, like where you did 10 days silent meditation and stuff. But I was young and I was rebellious, and I always found my way to kind of not do things actually correctly. And I was probably like a bit of a problem child for all of them.
It's like, you know, when you think about monks and you think, oh, they're going to be up in the mountain meditating all day. But then when you mention, oh, no, they're playing joke and never say what? You know, we have like a perspective on spiritual teachers and the monks, and we think that they just meditate all day and they're holy all day. But it's not the case, isn't it?
Ruho was the most fun monk I could ever imagine spending time with. He was just an absolute blast. Like, I don't think I've ever had so much fun with anyone. He was absolutely phenomenally brilliant. And everyone that met him agreed. He was great to go out dancing with. He used to come to clubs with me and everything.
Oh, really? Monk going to clubs.
He was, he was blind, and he would come, and he would come just to protect me, because I was like, oh, Ruha, it's so annoying, all these guys, they won't just let me dance. He's like, I'll come and protect you. So he would just come and meditate. And then if anyone came to, because I'd be like, Ruha, dance with me. And he'd get up, and he'd just dance, and he'd go wild, so no one could come near me.
Oh, that's amazing.
And then we'd bump into people that were like, oh my God, I was in your temple 30 years ago. You taught me shiatsu. You taught me meditation. And I was like, wow, you've made an impact on a lot of people. <You're next." laughs>
That's amazing. So, Lucidia, I know your grandfather was a poet. And your great-grandfather was an Italian opera singer. So you come from this side. You come from this artistic, creative background. So do you feel the music was always in you?
Definitely. And my dad, like, my dad was always playing music around me. My dad's a musician as well, and he writes beautiful songs. And so, yeah, that was the most glorious part of my childhood, I think, because just there was music. My mum loved to sing as well, so there was a lot of music. And my dad was in a band, and they used to rehearse in my house. And so it was just always about music. And I was always in it and into it. And I started writing poetry when I was about four. And my granddad would help me. I'd go take them to my granddad, and he'd say, like, no, that's not how you do it. You have to rhyme A with B. It has to be A, B, A, B, or A, B, A. So, you know, he would tell me all the rhyming patterns and make sure it was very traditional in English, and which I think in some ways stunted my creativity a bit, because I had a real free flow about my writing. But at the same time, it was so nice to be encouraged. And I just loved that time with my granddad, you know, where I'd sit with him in his room, and we'd sit there and look at my work together, and then he would show me his poems and explain why, you know, where I should work towards and how. And yeah, it was a very special thing. I'm so lucky to have had such wonderful teachers in my life. My granddad was just incredible in all levels. He grew food everywhere. Like, he had five allotments, and he grew food randomly all over the town where he lived.
Wow.
And he would go back every day on his walk and take water and water all his things on his plants. And he was just an amazing
man. That's a cool thing.
He was so cool.
That's amazing. What about you, Raphael? Are you from a musical background? When did you discover your
love? Absolutely not. In recent years, I found out that one of my great granddads, because both my mom and my dad come from this small village in central Spain, one of my great granddads did play a wind instrument. He played a horn in the town's band as an amateur, as an adult. So I found this out just only a few years ago. But before that, there's no one in my family that is a musician. Mm. My uncle, my mum's brother, does have an amazing voice. And he sings kind of quite operatic styles. But you know, no one who actually pursued an actual career in music. What there was a lot of was music in my house when I was growing up. I had, because I said I'm the youngest of five. So my older siblings, they were always playing, you know, mostly rock and pop music. So I was listening to a lot of like Spanish rock, as well as, you know, American and British, like, highlights, let's say. And so I really like what I do remember is that as a young child I loved music, and I really, you know, I remember knowing lyrics to songs I didn't quite understand, but I knew the lyrics to them, because I, you know, I played them on repeat, and it was kind of, so in my awareness there was a lot of you know, that was kind of my school, you know. And what happened is, when I was around 15, I was excuse me. Nice. I joined this Boy Scouts group when I was 13 and a bit, where my brother and my sister, my next two siblings, were already part of. And then when I was there, like, there was a lot of people who strummed a couple of chords on the guitar. So because there was a big culture of just playing guitars, and, you know, when you were camping and stuff. And and a couple of years after I joined, I was like, doesn't look so hard, you know? I see all these people just strumming a couple of chords, it doesn't look so hard. So I decided to give it a go. And like I said, there was so much music in my mind. And I was, you know, I guess at school when we had to learn music, play the recorder and stuff, like there was always me and another guy that always got the firsts on everything. because we had that natural musicality, whereas, you know, people who are really good in other areas, they really struggle with music. But anyway, as soon as I picked up the guitar, there was no looking back, basically. It was just like, I really had a strong feeling about it, and it felt like this is my path. This is my path, and that's it.
It was your soul call.
So, yeah, not so much a background, but I did have a really good, like, schooling in terms of music and a variety of styles and people, and I had it all in my consciousness. Mm-hmm. By the time I picked up the guitar, there was a lot there already.
So now, Lucidia, oh my God, I know you play the harp, and you're absolutely amazing at it, by the way, because when I met you at the Conscious Dinner Club, and you completely like blew me away. I was like, oh my God, she's so amazing. So like, how did that come about, like you playing the harp?
Well, that was funny, actually, because I never really was like, I mean, I did play a few, I dabbled with instruments like when I was younger, but I never really, it was all about singing for me more than anything else. So I did get quite into the violin at one point, but I gave everything up, you know, as I got older. And then when I was in Hawaii, when I was younger, I saw a couple playing the harp together. Mm. And so they were on one, each of them playing one harp. And it was just so beautiful and so romantic. And I was like, oh, maybe when I'm an old lady, like, I can't imagine ever getting into knitting or crochet. Maybe I'll play harp in my rocking chair. That's such a beautiful thing to do. And for some reason, that was what I thought. Like, amazing. It would be that then. Maybe I didn't imagine myself sitting down to actually study anything until that point or something. But then I was living in Brighton when I came back to England. Yeah, it was right before I got pregnant with my second child, and I went to have some singing lessons. I didn't know I was pregnant yet for sure, and I went to have some singing lessons, and I just signed up with this one. There was only one guy that I could find in the local newspaper offering singing lessons, and I didn't enjoy his singing lessons at all. Like, he just did not teach me in a way that I felt was really going to benefit me. But I paid for 10 lessons up front, and I was like, oh no. And I knew he wouldn't give the money back. I could feel it. Mm. And so I just said, is there anything else you teach other than singing? And he said, well, yeah, I teach harp.
Oh,
no. I was like, harp, really? That's interesting. I thought I'd quite like to play the harp. Well, can we switch the money and I can learn harp with you instead? And he was like, yeah, okay. So that was it. And that was amazing, because then when I started playing, I was just, oh, I'm so glad I didn't wait till I was old to play. This is actually quite a big thing. Like, I need like a lot of years of practice to be able to enjoy playing when I'm an old lady. So that's kind of what happened. And then it was amazing because, bless you, because he had this harp and then he was going to sell it to me. And then he changed his mind at the last minute. And I was really disappointed. And he was like, no, I'm going to keep it, actually. And then he said, well, maybe the guy that made it for me can make you one. So that connected me with my really wonderful teacher commissioned him to make me a harp. And that was my first harp, Gloria, who's actually on loan to my friend right now. I got that harp finally, but I basically had to wait because I realized I was pregnant, and then I knew I didn't have the money for it right then. So I had to, but he said he'd wait, basically, and he took payments, and finally I got my first harp.
Oh, that is amazing. That's amazing. Okay, so Raphael, I'm aware that you performed at the Roundhouse, the Royal Festival Hall, right? So very briefly, what was that experience like for you?
So that was basically, I was in Goldsmiths College in South London New Cross. I was studying psychology at the time, but I was connected to a lot of people in the music degree because I was doing some foundation courses, and I connected with some people. And so there was this choir run by this singer Eska. And that's how I ended up performing there. It was great. It was a great experience. It was fun. It was loads of fun because it was a lot of us, and it was a very dynamic performance. And you know, it's nice to be part of a big thing, you know. Particularly the Royal Festival Hall was also. It wasn't just 100 of us singing. There was also like a big band on stage, and the whole thing was coordinated by this electronic music producer and big band arranger called Matthew Herbert. And he had just released an album where Eska was the main performer. So so they basically got someone from the Laban Center so we weren't only singing, we had all this choreography going on. Mm-hmm. So there was this guy from the Laban Center that came to all our rehearsals to make the whole choreography for each one of the songs that we were singing at. So yeah, it was lots of fun. It was lots of fun, but it was a long time ago. It was all 13 years ago. And it was good. It was a nice experience.
Yeah, amazing. So now we know like a bit about your background. Amazing background, by the way. Yeah. Let's talk about Shinari. This amazing collaboration between the two of you, man. How did that come about?
I guess since we met in that that first event, then after that,
Shrinari comes from before.
Yeah, Shrinari is actually the name when Ruho, the Zen Shinto priest I lived with at the temple, he got very ill with cancer and died. Oh. And before he died, I'm not sad about it at all, which is a really funny thing, but he really prepared me very well for the transformation, and I never felt him gone, so I didn't have to grieve his loss. So that's why I'm not looking sad when I say that. But before he died, a few days before he died, I said, look, I know this is a really selfish thing to trouble you with right before you die and you're on your deathbed, but I really want you to choose the name for my music project. And he was like, he said, are you silly? That is my cosmic play, he said. And he was delighted to be asked. So he spent 3 days meditating on what should be the name for the music project. And he came up with the name Shrinari. So it was a name that I held for a while. I met the father of my kids. I had just met him before, and then we had that name together for our music. And then I met Raphael, and me and the father of my children parted ways in that way. And then we took on the name together, and Shrinari, because that name kind of had to go with me, because that was the name given to me by Ruho for my music. So then we started working together like straight away after we met, basically. We just started working. Raphael, at the time, he was living in Brixton, and we were up on his roof, like working out harmonies and practicing and making songs together and working on songs that we'd written and integrating each other into our songs. And we just never looked back. We've been busy at it ever since we met, like over 10 years ago now.
What does Shinari mean then?
Basically, he did tell me why he chose that name, but he also told me never to tell anybody.
Okay. Okay. So.
But it does.
It's
does
a top secret.
It does have a Sanskrit name.
It does
mean
Sanskrit. Yeah,
that's public. You know, that's
apparently in Sanskrit. Someone came up to me once after a gig, and they said in Sanskrit it means holy woman.
Beautiful.
I thought that was really beautiful. I don't know if Ruho was aware of that when he chose the name or not. But that was really nice to hear that it had that meaning. Ruho really revered me a lot. He called me Dragon Lady. He felt that I was like a dragon, and which is very important to Shinto mythology. So the fact he was really into Sanskrit, actually, funny enough, being a Japanese and Shinto priest, but it's quite possible that he understood
that he knew that.
Okay, so what was your journey in creating the kind of music that you do? Like, what is the message behind your music?
I've always been very, very clear that I'm here to write like for the earth, in a way, like environmental consciousness is really important to me. And I've always been feeling that that's a deep inner campaign of mine, to try to protect the environment as much as possible and to try and bring awareness to issues related to the environment. So that's like one really important thing. And to me, that's like, you know, spirituality in action, like the most profound and important spirituality of our times, you know, to really protect the planet and to really try to line up our philosophies and morals with what we do in each moment, which is what I try to do. And it's hard because it's impossible to move without any impact around this planet, or even just around, you know, London, you know, it's like, it's hard to be in integrity. So I don't manage it on every level. And I had to let go of being impeccable because it just caused me too much stress. And I didn't find a way. But I do try to teach my children as much as possible. And I try to also be in alignment with my values as much as I possibly can. And delivering a message about that is a massive and very integral to what I naturally speak about. And then also, like, there's a channeled element to my writing that really started coming through massively after spending the time with Ruho in the Zen temple. After that period of Zazen meditation, my writing changed and it became a lot more transcendental, much more beyond me. And one of I think the poem that was the kind of moment of transformation where my writing began to change. We were thinking about sharing that poem with you at the end of this podcast, because that's when that was when my writing became more transcendental, and it's actually called Transcendence. And we put it to music together. And channeling is something that I've been lucky enough to experience. You know, I don't see myself as in any way superior to anybody or inferior, and I've been working hard at not feeling inferior, because, you know, it's easy to have insecurities, and I'm definitely not beyond them. But working with just feeling the gratitude, really, of like when it comes as a blessing, and a waterfall of words comes through me, and just making sure I catch them and then share them with people, and just be grateful that somehow I was chosen to deliver those particular words. That's like my favorite thing in the world, really. And that's kind of what I live for, like those moments, as well as my children, who are like my greatest pieces of art, the way I see it.
It's really beautiful. I mean, because your music kind of, it's there to uplift the world, isn't it? So I think it's really, really beautiful. Now, I've seen quite a few artists trying to make it in America. There seems to be a theme happening here. Did you ever go down that route, going to America, trying to make it there?
Yeah, I was there in LA for a while, like, but before I moved up to the temple. And it was a really yucky world, really.
I think a lot of artists can relate.
A lot of toxicity and a lot of taking advantage of each other mentality. There was a lot of people using each other and trying to use me, and a lot of sexual lack of sexual integrity from people that were offering opportunities, and not just to me, to a lot of people. I could see so much ugliness. But I mean, it all happens in London as well. It's not like it doesn't happen here. But I did find it was, people call LA the belly of the beast, some people. And as much as it's got so much beauty and so much lovely nature and some amazing people, and definitely not saying LA is all bad, I have to say that my experience there was quite negative, because it was hard to know who to trust. And in the end, I felt like my conclusion was just there wasn't anyone there that I could trust. But it's not that I've never met good people from LA, because I have. I've met some really special people, some of them since I left LA. But I think it makes you very vulnerable when you're a young woman in a city where you don't have anyone around to look after you, and, you know, everybody knows that you're far away from your family. It's kind of like, it makes you kind of a prime target for manipulation. So
if you're highly
it was enlightening in a way.
So I guess, like, if you're highly sensitive soul, then you would struggle quite a lot in media, unless you don't work through your own issues. So what would you say to the girls, or even men who are in the same position, and what would you say to them? How would you sort of, like...
I would say to, like, really listen and be so true to yourself, because it's so easy to get swept, especially when people start dangling, you know, carrots in front of you, like, oh, I can give you this and I can give you that. And sometimes people, they work you out before you've even opened your mouth. They know what you want to hear just by looking at you, the way you dress, the way you present yourself. or they hear you talking to someone else and they already know what you want to hear and what you'll find convincing. So I think it's really important to really listen to your intuition, and to, if you have any doubt, get out, really. Don't stay in a situation for any amount of time that feels like it might be taking something from you, or that's asking you to step outside of your comfort zone and take some space, reevaluate, and then if you feel that it's safe, come back to it. But don't hang out where it seems like you might be pulled out of your center. You know, which is a good reminder for me even now. Like, it's, we're all learning all the time and being reminded constantly of what we've learned. And I'm so lucky now to have Raphael by my side, and somebody that, you know, I'm so inspired by his art and his writing and his musicality and everything that he brings to me. And I also have him as a partner, so I have his protection right there. So that's a shield, you know. And I'm so blessed to have a shield. And I'd say to have people around that you can trust as much as possible, like, and not to just put yourself into crazy situations without anyone you know, and hope for the best. Like, make sure you've got a backup plan always, and
it's about trusting the sign from the universe, right?
Listening really intuition. Yeah, and logic as well. Like, don't go to a random part of town where you don't know anybody, you know, just being, you know, a little bit streetwise, which I wasn't at all. Like, I got myself into so many difficult situations and I learned the hard way. But I think people these days, young people, are a little bit more aware in general. I think there's a lot more awareness out there and a lot more support. I hope. It seems like that.
Yeah.
I think my children anyway, you know, they're teenagers now and they're a lot more savvy than I was at their age. They just seem to have this inbuilt kind of know-how, and they kind of just get what's up, you know. They're naturally cool, you know. They're like, much harder to mislead than I was, I think.
Yeah, that's a great advice for young kids out there who are trying to make it in America or even in UK.
In London, anyway.
Yeah.
I've had all kinds of experiences here too.
Now I'm in your mantra club, and so every morning you sing mantras, and I think it's such an incredible thing you're doing, because mantras, as you know, they're quite powerful. And I just want to know how did that come about? Like, what was your reason behind mixing mantras to the mix of your music?
I think mantra is a very, you know, because it's transpersonal. And I guess I have tended to write in a quite transpersonal way anyway, when I write songs in recent years. But because it is transpersonal, it's much more relatable, and, you know, as long as people are in the current of that, and they understand why it is the way it is, then it's a, you know, it's a very shareable experience, and it's nice to be able to offer that to people. I guess we have been part of the yoga meditation scene for quite a few years now, and mantra is quite a feature in that environment, and people get it and understand what the power is of emptying your mind and calling on these energies and using sound and the power of your voice just using your voice as a healing thing.
And then
when you tap into these currents that have been switched on for so long, with so many prayers put into them and so much energy already put into them, even from a psychological perspective, you know, going back to what I was saying earlier about me being interested in Jung and that type of psychology, you're kind of tapping into the collective subconscious and tapping into all these energies that, you know, that are primordial and that, you know, that are there. So it's it's part of our spiritual practice, and it's a great thing to offer to people. So because we are artists and we write songs and we have done for so long. That's our natural expression. It's very easy to get into the mantra aspect of things, but it's very easy to combine them too. So what we do is we create our own music for the mantras, which I guess perhaps to some people maybe not the way you should do it. I'm not really sure.
We don't really know. We don't really because know much what's
yeah. So
expected or not.
Yeah,
expected.
but
we hope we're not disrespecting anybody.
So to me, the most important thing is that it feels right. You know, and. Yeah.
And essentially, people started asking us to sing mantra. That's what happened. And we play a lot for a woman who's half Hindu and comes from her father was Hindu. So she started asking us to sing mantra. Other people started asking us to sing mantra. And at first, I was actually like, why is everyone asking me to sing mantra? Like, I didn't really understand it. I thought there's plenty of people doing it. Like, why should I be another one? And then what happened was she had asked us in one of her events to sing a mantra to Shiva. And I had a very shamanic experience where I felt, as I was singing, I felt Shiva. That I didn't even know what Shiva exactly felt like before that, but I felt the energy of Shiva coming and coiling through my crown chakra, through my head, into my body and taking me over. And it was a completely profound experience and I didn't expect it. And then I was like, oh, okay, there's something to this. And then it started to happen with different deities as that we would pray to, that we would sing to them. And they would reveal themselves to me shamanically in that way through my energy body coming into me and presenting themselves to me. And that was why I got into, I was like, okay, yeah, I think it's good that we sing mantra because this is really cool and very cosmic and I enjoy supernatural experiences and I always have. So when I started to see evidence that what we were doing actually had a tangible power that was beneficial in my life, I was like, wow, this is really cool. And everyone's into it. Everyone asks us to sing it. Yeah. Everyone joins in. It's not like our songs, which can be quite intricate. And then there's a lot of group singing, which takes place, which is very beautiful as well. And it takes us to another place and it's more inclusive. It involves our audience more. And it's ultimately just a very profound and viable way to connect to the sacred and just to say the holy name, which is what I understand is kind of the essence of kirtan. So
That is beautiful. I mean, I love your mantra. It's there every day.
Really enjoy the mantra and then just like, you know, learning as we go. We're still learning. We're definitely not experts. And then and it's nice just to be humble in that and be present for the journey of exploration as well, sharing that with others.
You're not meant to know. I mean, you know, like you say, like universe will align you with what you need to do now and then align you with something else. So you have to be open to everything, right? So I'm aware that you work with cacao, right? So can you explain it to the listeners who have no idea what this is and what are the benefits of it?
So cacao is basically like the pure essence of chocolate, which is when it's untreated, basically unroasted, nothing's added to it. It's like the cacao is a plant, it's a bean, and it has like over 300 naturally occurring chemical alkaloids, which are really beneficial to the health. And then what happens when people make things into make that into chocolate, they change the temperature, they add cheap oils, they add often dairy, lots of sugar, and then it becomes junk food. Before that happens, it's actually an incredibly powerful and healing medicine. It's not for everyone. There are contraindications. I'm very responsible. So if I'm going to talk about something, I always have to speak about the contraindications, like for people with, like if they're on certain medications, especially like certain antidepressant medications, if they have heart problems, blood pressure issues, it might not be the right medicine. So it's always worth checking with your physician. Have to be sensible here, and you can read about it online in great detail. But basically for most people, it's an incredibly beneficial medicine, which literally assists you in opening your heart. It releases like molecules it releases in the brain, and it opens the heart, makes you feel a sense of euphoria and a sense of connectedness to everything. And also gives you a massive energy boost and helps you also to connect to nature, being a plant spirit, a plant deity. And so, I mean, for me, taking cacao, having this pure ceremonial grade cacao chocolate, and then being outside in nature, making music, going for beautiful walks, like it's all very synergistic with the cacao, with the cacao plant. And so we love to combine that as a ceremony, as a lot of people are doing, like we're definitely not the first. There's a lot of people doing cacao ceremonies where they make a beverage out of the cacao and do meditations and healings and different kinds of journeys. And we obviously combine our music within that ceremonial space. And we work with a really beautiful yin yoga teacher, Sandy Sharkey, who works in London where we work. And so we make a ceremony with her. We do yin yoga, we do sound healing, we do group singing. We also play some of our music and then we do an ecstatic dance as well. And it's a beautiful experience. And we're very honored to be able to host those works and to hold the container for people to experience that medicine and to enjoy our music with that enhancement.
I mean, it's a great combination, the cacao and your music. You're saying, like, it's amazing.
That's what I thought. I was like, this is great. We get to like be in this music, we get to drink cacao, we get to feel like so much bliss, even more than normal. This is brilliant.
Well, that's amazing. So what are your plans for the future? I mean, what's next for Shinari?
So Shrinari.
Well, one thing is we want to grow our mantra club. We're doing it every morning at 10 a.m. Until 10:30, and we're doing it on Zoom. Although on Monday we do it on our Facebook, Shrinari, which is Shrinari, and on Instagram as well. On Mondays we do it on all platforms. And then the rest of the time, every morning, every single day, it's from 10 till 10:30 on Zoom. And that's just really a lovely thing because we get to meet with a group of people that take part in that club and sing with us every morning as a spiritual practice. So it's a way of us committing to our mantra practice and everyone else committing to their practice with us, which is a real beautiful thing to do.
It's a service.
It's a service.
I mean, as in what's next for us? We don't have like a very structured plan as to how things are going to develop. I mean, things are happening right now. I'm working on a remix of one of our songs for a compilation for this charity, tree planting charity that's based in Portugal, what works mostly in Brazil. So that's gonna happen in the next couple of weeks. We're gonna put out a track with them, and other than that, it's just I guess just keep doing what we're doing and growing our following and I think we're doing everything very grassroots. Like I don't envision us having like a record deal or anything like that. What I envision us having is a really strong following of people who know us and love us and who, you know, very from the ground up. That's how I see it, because it's the nature of what we do, and it's
we're not pop, so we have to go grow things in an organic way.
And then, that's the best way to do it.
I mean, I personally have a mixed feeling about the whole traveling, like, because we know some people who, even at an alternative level, they travel the world constantly because, you know, they go an event here and an event there. I have mixed feelings about that, because I feel like the whole carbon footprint is kind of like almost against my ethos. I personally feel like, because, you know, like the way I feel about this, and it's funny that this whole lockdown has made us have to do Facebook Lives so regularly, because all our concerts were cancelled, and then suddenly we're in this situation where, you know, the way for us to get our music out there was just to do Facebook Lives. And I actually love it. I actually love the fact that you can be in your living room.
Yeah.
And you can have this really healthy lifestyle where you're literally just going out for walks in nature. Mm. You're coming back home, you're doing your work, and then you connect with people from anywhere in the world.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and like just having people in Australia and New Zealand and people in the States and people in South America people in Europe just all connect and be able to enjoy your music like that. Yeah. And I understand that, obviously, if I'm going to watch music, I always prefer to see the people face to face. But at the same time, the idea that you can listen to any artist from anywhere in the world,
mm-hmm. yeah,
just from your living room, and that the sound quality is so good, yeah. actually.
Yeah, you know, it is. Yeah, most of the time. A lot of people are going online nowadays, aren't they? So,
yeah,
it's a right. good thing. Yeah, so now I have some
love being with people there. I mean,
I do love being with people. What I'm saying is, as our following grows, because that's how what I expect to happen. Because Lucidia just finished a university degree, and our lives.
Congratulations, by the way.
and our lives somehow have been such that we couldn't really fully focus on our music as much as that we did. You know, we've been quite focused and we've put a lot of energy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we haven't been able to make the music 100% of our focus because we had too many other things in our plate. Mm-hmm. It really feels like right now is the moment where we're really going to put that 100%. Level of 100%.
Yeah.
Because the kids are bigger. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, we've climbed a certain number of mountains in our life.
Yeah.
And we're at a place right now where this is it now, we're just going to carry on playing it out
and
there.
I guess we don't really know where that's going to take us is the truth. Like we pray and we hope and we aim you know, ultimately it's about spreading our music as far and as wide as possible, and that's always been my vision, just wanting to potentialize the gift that's given, because this is the gift that we've been given, this is where we're guided to go and what we're guided to share, and so just hoping that it reaches as many people as possible to potentialize what comes through us and what we're dedicating our time to and our efforts to, you know?
It's going back to just trust the timing of everything. So I have a couple of rapid fire questions for you before we head off. We're short on time. Okay. Are you guys ready? So what, you got to answer this really quickly. Yeah, really quickly. So what we'll do is Lucidia answers first and then Raphael, and then we can go into, Okay. Ready. Okay. So what is your definition of God?
Wow, God to me is vast. I couldn't possibly put God into a word because who knows? But I remember once having a meditation where I rested in God's lap and I could feel the eternal nature of God spanning out in all directions. And for me, it's that vast, endless, boundless, all-giving, all-permeating consciousness that is just beyond form. And I'm so grateful to have it inside of me.
Oh, beautiful. What about you, Raphael? It's really beautiful. What about you, Raphael?
Undefinable.
Beautiful.
And unnecessary to define. Is existence itself. Yeah.
Right. So, very quickly, how do you define religion and spirituality?
Religion, for me, speaks about the kind of set way of viewing things that certain groups of people have across the planet, which I respect deeply. I have no idea who's wrong or right about anything. But what I do feel is that spirituality is something with less boundaries, less definition, and something which feels more like an organic realization from within. To me, however, I'm always open to be being proven wrong by anyone who wants to take it on. I don't know. With all respect to everyone, religious or spiritual or otherwise.
Okay, what about you?
So, religion, the word itself, the etymological meaning of it is reconnection.
Mm-hmm.
So, the reason why they use that word is because it was supposed to be a reconnection to yourself. Now, when it comes to what we understand as religion, as organized religion, as many people have already pointed out in the past, it has diverged, you know, it has gone a different way. And it has become more like a kind of controlled structure than anything else. And often, more often than not, connected to political powers. Spirituality, I think it's a very open and wide term that encompasses pretty much anything you want to put into it. But the one common thread is the connection to the immaterial, to the spirit, which is that which isn't physical. And I guess that's what it would be. Yeah.
Okay. So what's the lesson that took you the longest to learn? Very briefly, I know we all have big lessons.
That's a huge lesson.
In a really nutshell.
Oh my God. I mean, I think I'm still trying to learn very, very basically. Like, I guess one thing which I struggle with is I trust way too easily, and I keep learning again and again that I shouldn't give my trust so easily. And as much as I see the God in everybody, the humanity is more complex than the divine being that is innate in every one of us. Mm. And I need to understand and live with the awareness that it's better to hold myself with more containment and not just give everything to everybody so willingly, because I found that it just often causes in me getting hurt or mistreated. And and especially, I could say, sometimes in the spiritual community, is, you know, it's incredible. It's been incredible, literally. So, yeah, I guess that's it. And boundaries, like, it's all about boundaries and learning about boundaries. I didn't really grow up knowing about boundaries. My dad is an incredible man, incredibly spiritually uplifting man, and he's also kind of boundaryless in a way. He's like a very big being, and I think I just never learned that, so I'm learning about that still. I'm like a child. I never really developed like into an adult in certain ways. So I'm just constantly learning, like with fresh eyes, you know, fresh perspective. Always at step one.
What about you, Raphael?
So I mean, it'd be really hard to answer that question accurately and literally. But one lesson that I definitely haven't fully learned, and it's important, is that nothing that happens to you is personal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah. That's
thank God.
That's on my list.
Because taking it personally is the beginning of reacting.
Yeah.
And yes. And that reacting is where you just give away your energy to anything, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, that's. I think there's a lesson that everyone wants to learn. Okay, so one last one. Do you believe there's an end to healing?
No, absolutely not. I mean, even the Zen Shinto priest that I was lucky enough to live with, that a lot of people saw as a guru and a spiritual teacher, even he, on the rare occasion, showed me there was still something left to heal. And I honestly don't believe that, like, anyone, I don't know, I don't want to say I don't believe, I have never met anyone 100% perfect or enlightened or flawless in this lifetime, even people that other people perceive to be so.
Yeah.
So I personally just believe that as humans, we're always going to have a little bit of, when you are in duality, I think when being a human being creates a certain duality, which I believe we transcend when we leave the body. If I meet someone that's 100% bona fide enlightened, I will let you know. Until then, that's my perspective, yeah.
Mm. What about you, Raphael?
So, yeah. I agree with Lucidia. The way I see it is, if you're in the world, you're kind of like, you're in a process, and it being alive is being in a process, and that process always leads somewhere else. And I guess, again, going back to the word healing, if you're talking about a specific aspect of something, then you could say that comes to a place where it's resolved, and then that specific healing would have somehow concluded to some extent. Mm-hmm. But as a wider idea of healing, I think healing is the process of leaving.
Living, yeah.
And
nature is cyclical, isn't it? So it's like, I think things run in cycles a lot.
Yeah.
Like,
Absolutely agree with that.
It's like a romantic idea to believe that one could reach the plateau and say, that's it, I've made it. And I made that mistake many times when I was younger, and I'm not about to make it again.
So finally, what is the one message that you would like to share with someone who's going through adversity right now, someone who can't see the light at the end of, like, you know, they're in darkness and they can't see the light? What would you tell them right now?
I would say, like, don't give up, because even though you can't see how things will be around the corner, the path is full of twists and turns, and you will turn a corner. And if you make it past that corner by not giving up now, I guarantee you that you'll be glad that you didn't give up back then, you know, when you were struggling, because we just can't imagine how beautiful life can become. As much as troubles can come our way, we can't imagine the blessings that we are yet to experience. And there's been moments in my life where I really didn't want to be here anymore. And I'm so grateful I stuck around, you know. Yeah. I'm so, so grateful I stuck around to know the beauty of my life now, despite the fact that adversity still arises and struggles still come, and people are still mean sometimes and things are still difficult, and sometimes even really difficult things happen. But I'm so grateful to be here to live this experience. And one thing I learned is that life is an absolute gift. It's an absolute treasure, and we are so blessed to have this experience of living. So
absolutely, that is.
I hope
so
that you can hold that in your heart and just sit with that awareness that it's a gift, and hold it tight to your heart while you ride through these waves until you make it through into the spaciousness again.
So beautiful, really, really beautiful. So, how can people contact you?
So basically, they can either follow us on Instagram at Srinari Music, or follow us on Facebook at Srinari. They can also email us. If they go to srinari.com, there's a website there with a contact page. They can email our manager there if they want to book us for anything. Also, they can follow that page to our music on Bandcamp. And they can follow us on Spotify at Srinari. Yeah,
that's
plenty of ways through the website.
It's
a good one.
So guys, go follow them. These guys are absolutely amazing. Now they're gonna sing us a song. Or more song, whichever way. I was hoping you're gonna play the harp.
I'm not playing a harp in this one. Transcendence, Zen, beyond philosophy, beyond mind, enveloped in spirit. Gesture moves me onward in stillness, in flight, in worldly view. My vision soars beyond escape, returning home beyond destination. A capsule of time, in time, out of time, holding to the beauty and then letting it go. I remember truth lies. Twilight, beyond words, beyond meaning, beneath sound, all aspects of myself are harmonized.
Oh, that was so beautiful. Thank you so, so much, guys, for coming on this podcast. And yeah, I absolutely love you guys. I adore you. I feel connected to you. Love your energy. And I wish you all the best. And I know for sure you guys are going to make it. I know for sure. I have that inner knowing. Yeah, so thank you so much. Is there any last words you would like to say?
Thank you so much for having us here and for valuing what we do and for being such a devoted enjoyer of our music.
I'm your number one fan. All right, thank you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you for everything.
We really do.
Okay, take care. Bye.
See you soon.
Bye-bye. Lots of love.
Thank you so much for listening to Soul Awakenings with Madhya Sosan podcast. I would love to know what your biggest takeaway from this conversation has been. Share your thoughts on my Facebook and Instagram, Madhya Sosan. You can also check out my website, madhyasosan.com.
soulofawakenings.com. If you would like to watch this episode, then head over to my YouTube channel, Mads Corner, M-A-D-Z Corner. If you enjoyed this episode, then please do rate and share this with your family and friends. Thank you once again, and I will see you on the next episode.